This podcast is brought to you by lineupmedia.fm. It's time to step up to the plate with Jim, Steve, Fish, and former two-time Gold Glover World Series champion, Benji Molina.
A swing and a miss, and that's the winner! That's the winner! A World Series winner for the Cardinals!
Ranger, that is! In the left field, December 3000, a run is scored!
Smith, courts one into right, down the line, it may go! Go crazy, folks! Go crazy!
A high pop ball! The Clover's there! The Cardinals won the pennant! The Cardinals won the pennant! The Cardinals won the pennant!
Breeze hits it in the air to center. We will see you tomorrow night.
Swing and a miss! The Cardinals are world champions for 2006!
In the air to left, well hit. Back is Craig. What a team! What a ride! The Cardinals are world champs in 2011.
Hello, Cardinal fans, and welcome to this Wednesday edition of Bow Ties and Bullshit, a product of your good friends from Two Birds on a Bat, and as always, coming to you from the Patio Studios, the original party place for St. Louis Cardinal fans everywhere. Make sure you check out Patios, whether it's pre or post game. It's the place to enjoy some beverages, meet some friends, have a great time, and really get in that atmosphere for Cardinal baseball. Also, a shout out to my good friend Randy Green with InnovativeCompanies.com, residential, commercial, industrial. Randy's the name you know and trust. 35 years experience, second-generation craftsman, just a tremendous human being, and I'd mentioned yesterday on the other show that, you know, spends a lot of time and effort during the holidays to make sure that those that are less fortunate are taken care of, and it's important to him, it's important to Stephanie, his daughter, and the rest of his family, and you know, he considers, you know, the people that work for him family, so it's important to them as a company, and that's why I'm proud to be associated with InnovativeCompanies.com. Don't forget, just asking for an opportunity for your business. And if you're a first responder or you're involved in the military, they have a special discount for you. All you got to do is show your proper identification. So Randy Green, InnovativeCompanies.com, needless to say more. So, well, you know, we're in that time now. We've had the non-tender stuff has went on. And it's been interesting to look at what's available. And it's almost I'm going to compare this to something here in a second. And before I do, because I want to get his thoughts on it, I was looking at it yesterday because, you know, I've been on this Treenan thing. And, you know, there's other guys as well that I think are interesting cats. I think in the end, it always comes down to players like that and what it's going to cost you. Term, the amount of money. I think term's probably a bigger deal than the amount of money because anytime – something's available, multiple people want it, it's worth what it's worth. I think term becomes an issue for everybody because guys that come available like that you weren't counting on, and now it might not fit in with your, let's say, your three-year plan. So to me, I started looking back at my love affair, I guess, with Treenan and his role with the Cardinals, as I see where it could be important, and just started thinking to myself, why am I so excited about a guy that was awful last year? So anytime I want to talk about a guy that was awful or great, who better to bring in than everyone's favorite shirtless wonder, Kyle Reese? What's going on?
Hello there. Ready to talk training.
Well, you know, it's training. I'm pronouncing it wrong. Okay.
Who knows? I'm the one who pronounces it wrong.
It might be training.
Blake and move.
Let's call him Blake. I'm going to call him overused in 2018, yeah. Which I think has had some things to do with 19, but you don't know that for sure. I had mentioned yesterday on the show that the thing that stood out to me in 18 was the fact that he had a lot of innings, that the appearances, the games pitched in weren't awful, had a lot of innings, which tells me he had a lot of multiple inning outings, which is, you know, and I said yesterday, pitching out of the bullpen's not healthy to begin with. Multiple innings is even worse. Anyway, but I'm sitting here, and it hit me last night. This is like a garage sale. That's what non-tendered guys are. It's a garage sale. It's somebody else's junk that they didn't want, So they're getting rid of it. Now, it might still be okay, and it might still work, but they didn't think enough of it to take up any more space in their home. And now all of a sudden, you got to have it in your home. You know what I mean? Yeah. That's what it feels like to me, because I'm sitting here going, everybody and their brother would love to have a back of the end, shut down, strike out, right-handed pitcher. It would have only been 1 year. I mean, he wouldn't have been outrageously expensive. I mean, he would have cost what the going rate was for a guy like that. Why in the world would somebody just let that go when they're just going to have to replace him with somebody else? And then it hit me. This is the Oakland A's. They're going to replace him with a major league minimum salary, and they didn't think enough of a guy that was a shutdown closer a year before to keep him? Is he damaged goods? I don't know, but that's when it's a yard sale. He's a tchotchke. He's a, just like the rest of them, he's a knickknack. Am I on to something here now?
No, that's the landscape of Major League Baseball. The Orioles are the worst team in baseball. They have a 4-win player, and they non-tender him because he's going to make $9 million. You know, or they didn't non-tender him. They tried to put him on outright waivers. They made him trade with the Marlins for the Marlins to acquire VR. That is the landscape of Major League Baseball. A player that is worth less than one WAR, if he is not making less than X amount of $1 million, he gets released when it comes to this time. And that's owners, by and large, owners and front offices have a formula, and they're abiding by the formula. And teams aren't going to deal with for a 6.5. You know, they tried trading Blake T, we'll call him. They tried trading Blake T. They didn't have any luck. So it gets non-tendered at 6.5, because 6.5 is, a lot of money in today's market for baseball. It doesn't really seem like a lot for a $10-plus billion industry and an organization that makes, you know, anywhere from above, we'll just say above $50 million, because it's been proven that nearly every team makes about above 50 mil. But, hey, that's the landscape. And it went from, I love what you're saying about a garage, but now it's more like an estate sale. Because, you know, back in the day, it used to be a garage sale. Teams would just let their junk guys who, you know, it was more of a junk sale than at that point. But now you actually have a chance to bid on some pretty impressive players that might actually be able to help your team and help your team in the near future. Whereas, you know, back in the day, you were just like, oh, I need an end table. I'll get an end table and hope that it lasts as long as possible. We're here where you can actually say, oh, look, I have a, there's a, well, now there's not, but there was a 4-WAR player out there that could have been acquired at basically no expense at all. It's the landscape of Major League Baseball doesn't make any sense, and it's just proof that we still haven't fully adapted to it and how it's adapting to itself. And boy, is it confusing, in my opinion, but it just goes to show you that teams are trying to make money hand over fist, and that's where we're at right now.
So let's stay on training then, the Blake, as we'll call him, because we're not 100% sure if it's training or training, but let's stay on Blake then. So I'm thinking maybe you're on the train, like, hell yeah, like, definitely worth it.
Yeah, hell yeah. Yeah, I mean, there's no reason not to. I like some of the arms that the Cardinals have that have the capability of pitching out of the bullpen next year, but it's not going to kill you. I doubt he's going to get anything more than 1 year, $6 million that you might have been willing to trade for, you know, a week ago. And maybe it's 2 years, $6 million. I'd still do that. Maybe it's 1 year, $5 million. If it's 1 year, 6.5, if it's a match, I'd still do it. It's a low cost, you know, unless somehow he thinks that he's going to get, you know, more than 2 years and an advanced salary, which I don't feel like is going to happen. I could be very well wrong. But I would think that it's worth taking a flyer on. It's worth seriously negotiating with, for sure. It seems like the Cardinals lack a bit of veteran depth in their bullpen. They have a lot of young arms, but it'd be nice to have that veteran depth.
Yeah, I think one of the things I realized when I got all excited about the opportunity, because, you know, it hit me that he would be what I would consider to be a low-cost option of a guy that, you know, it was like Andrew Miller a little bit for me, in that I was okay. Like, I know Andrew Miller wasn't great the year before we got him. He was he was good and bad, like he kind of was last year, right? Like, at times he looked dominant, and other times you're like, holy cow, what's going on here, right? Yeah. So, and I said then that I was okay with it because it wasn't like they signed a guy that either was a one-hit wonder or was average. I felt like I gambled on the fact that when this guy's good, he's really, really good. And that's what I was gambling I was going to get. And I didn't feel like the money was like a ridiculous amount of money for what you were getting. Now, I guess, though, I look at Blake and I think to myself, well, I'll take a flyer on him because, you know, if it doesn't work out, it's not like it's the end of the world. But then I started thinking this is an organization that wouldn't cut Luke Gregerson loose over $4 million.
Yeah.
And insisted on trying to get some. They're doing it with Brett Cecil, right? Like they're insist. Now that could be business reasons. We've heard rumblings that maybe there's something to do with insurance there or something. Who knows? You know, I don't know all those back room particulars, but you know, they certainly tried to run. They tried to run Luke Gregerson out there, and he didn't make much money. I'd say Blake's going to make a. You know, I would think he'd make about that maybe.
I think that's a good call.
I could be crazy, but that's what it feels like. Am I wrong?
No. And there's even comparison there because, you know, Luke Gregerson was a former closer that did really well that kind of hit a rough patch. And then the Cardinals gave him a 2-year contract that didn't pan out. You know, you don't want that with Blakey, but I wouldn't expect him to get, I would not expect him to get 6.5 annually. I don't think that that's his market. I think it's something less than that. And I think that $4 million range is exactly what you're talking about. And, you know, of course you'd want a 1-year deal because then you would, you know, the Cardinals waited to cut Gregerson until that last year. If it's only in the last year, they're more than willing to cut it. So if you give them 1 year, then they might be more willing to cut it as opposed to 2 years and trying to get value out of them in the second year. But yeah, they have a track record of not cutting bait, you know, when things get really bad. And it's not even just with relief pitchers, Johnny Peralta, you know, they want to get all of the value that they can, but I love it. I go get him. You know, Kevin Gausman's another interesting one. You know, he was terrible last year, but when he was with the Reds, he had a 30% strikeout rate or something like that, and only walked 5% of batters. It was pretty good in a hitter-friendly park. Maybe he discovered something as a bullpen arm. If he wants to stay in a bullpen, like he's interesting. There are interesting guys out there that'll probably come relatively cheap, and I hope that they mine the market a little bit for sure.
Yeah, and like I said, I don't want to lump all of them into I don't want to lump them all into one category because I understand that there's different things. I would say this as I look at the Cardinals, just the Cardinals and their needs. I'm not that in like there's some players on there that I think their names, right? Like that you're supposed to get excited about because for a long time we heard Mikel Franco, you know, like God, he's going to be this big time third baseman for Philadelphia. And all of a sudden he's available. And you look back and he had some moments, right?
Yeah.
Here's a team that has no idea where they're going on the infield. And yet they just let him go and they have money. You know, Hernandez, but I think Cesar Hernandez is a pretty good player and they let him go. Now, Franco, him, I don't know. Like, maybe you just get tired of guys eventually. Like, I know Hernandez at times couldn't stay healthy and he'd be real good and then he wouldn't, you know, and you'd go through this stuff. And maybe sometimes you just think, you know, we need a new route here. And, when you're talking about Major League Baseball players, and salaries and things like that. Boy, teams typically don't cut bait like this. Like, I guess at this rate. So, would you say that this is kind of like, how do I want to say this? Is this piggybacking off the way the market has set for free agents as well? Like, is this showing us the change in how players are valued, especially up against, like, roster spots and salary?
Yeah, this is the new market standard. And I know we're focused on this year, but this year was just an extrapolation off of last year. You know, same thing last year. There were a lot of interesting guys who were cut for the very same reasons that these guys are from, you know, teams that are looking to save money who might be tanking or might not be tanking. And it just wasn't as flashy as it was this year. Yeah, this is definitely the new market market efficiency, I guess is probably the best way to put it. This is how baseball has adapted. This is how it's changed. You know, I remember about a year ago, And I don't remember exactly what the catalyst of the conversation was. It might have been we were talking about minor league salaries. I remember talking about minor league salaries with you. I remember talking about major league salaries. And, you know, we were frustrated about the market moving slow. And we were frustrated about, you know, guys not getting contracts, guys signing cheap. And this is definitely a part of that. This is ownership following, you know, ownership across the board following a map. You know, following Jimmy Johnson's draft board that changed the way that the draft was, where X guy was worth this value at this pick. If you didn't trade for that pick or that guy at that value, then you didn't make the trade on draft day. Like, it's the same kind of thing, and it's going on with baseball. This is what we've talked about. It's impossible to adjust to it other than to expect nearly every team to be as cheap as possible, except for teams that have been sitting and waiting for years to make a splash, you know, like the Padres or the Phillies or probably the White Sox this year. You know, Braves are kind of in that position, but the Braves are different because they develop quicker than they thought they were. You know, we've seen Milwaukee now. What's Milwaukee doing? They're doing the opposite. They basically cut bait with anyone who wouldn't sign a cheap-ass contract with them, and now they're adjusting to the market in that regard. Maybe they get aggressive in the free agent market because they cut bait with guys. But it's definitely like patience is run thin in organizations. And the understanding that maybe war is a little bit easier replaced than we realize at usually a cheaper cost than we also realize too. And yeah, I do. I think this is the standard now until we get to the next collective bargaining agreement.
Well, it's interesting that you brought up Milwaukee. While you were talking, I was looking up their non-tender list. And the reason I did it was because, you know, they had some names on there. And I had, you know, obviously they're in the Cardinals division, and I had saw comments, oh, well, there goes Milwaukee, there goes the rebuild. And I'm sitting there going, I have a complete different view of it. Mm-hmm. I'm looking at it going, what, like, who'd they cut that you're going, oh, my God, they're not going to be any good now because they cut these people. What I see is a team that cut some guys, and now they're going to, like, I'm a big believer sometimes in addition by subtraction.
Yep.
Like the Cardinals would be better, in my opinion, with some addition by subtraction. You know what I mean? The problem is we don't get to non-tender a couple guys that I'd like to non-tender. They're not available to be non-tendered. But for these guys, like, I mean, Travis Shaw, I had him on my fantasy team for a while. And even though he hit 30 home runs, I mean, he was one of the most frustrating guys I'd ever seen in my life.
Yeah.
And, you know, I know it sounds weird to say that, but like Junior Garrett, there's another guy. Every time you think, oh man, he's going to be a guy. Nope. Jimmy Nelson can't stay healthy. The guy that I thought was interesting was Claudio.
Me too.
He's an interesting cat. I'm wondering, and I don't know this, maybe this is something that would be good that you may know the answer to. Is he a product? I wonder what his splits are. Is he a product of the new rule?
Oh, you know what? I didn't even think about that. But yeah, I don't know offhand, but I think that you're probably knocking on the right door.
I'm wondering if he gets just demolished by right-handed hitters. Mm. You know? I mean, I just, you wonder. You know what I mean? Like, is he going to, does he get, like, with that guy, I mean, that would be the only thing that I could think that you would, I mean, that's not a ton of money, is it?
Yeah.
$2 million?
No, no.
They were looking at for him? I mean, I don't know. I mean, I didn't think it was that crazy.
Do you by chance, what were they projecting for Shaw had he hit, you know, got
$4 million, $4.7 million maybe?
That's what I thought. Like, so I think he's the perfect example of this, right? He's had a couple dynamite offensive years and then last year struggled. And now
it was way more than struggle. I mean, it was.
Yeah, he was terrible. He was terrible. I'm sorry. You're right. I'm glad that you corrected that. Because that's the point I was going to try to make about teams valuing players. Like, Milwaukee realizes now that, okay, do we commit $4 million to a guy who may or may not repeat prior success after having a terrible year? Or do we reallocate those funds somewhere else? And teams now have decided, well, we're not gonna bank on that. Like, we're not gonna bank on those guys getting back to what they were. And the same thing with VR. The Orioles are saying basically, there's no way he has another 4 WAR season, so we're definitely not gonna give him $9 million. And what they're doing is they're just, well, so hopefully what they're doing, not all teams are doing it. The Orioles won't do it with the 9 for VR. But, you know, the Brewers, in my opinion, because I trust Stearns, and I think he's a good executive, and I think we all know he's a good executive, is going to reallocate those funds to somebody who can actually help the team. You know, I think they probably wanted Moustakas back, and that backfired. But I do think that they're going to reallocate those funds because they realize that war is kind of a, it's not consistent. You can't bank on it aside from, like, the elite 5% of baseball, you know, who do it year in and year out. Otherwise, it's kind of a crapshoot because of how tough the sport is in general. So I love the Shaw thing because he's going to go somewhere. He's probably going to get more than $4 million over a couple of years. It'll be San Francisco or something like that, you know, 2 years, $6 million, like a Nick Markakis type deal, something like that. And he'll probably never be as good again. And somehow the Brewers will allocate that $4 million to somebody who will vastly improve their team.
I just, the whole way across. Now, some guys I see, like, I don't know what your thoughts were, but I was looking at two guys. Now, who knows what they're more, I can't believe it'd be much, but like, you talk about garage sale guys, like, that you get all excited. And again, this is what I compare it to. Like, Aaron Sanchez and Tuan Walker, in my opinion, are, you walk up on a garage sale and you go, holy cow. Yeah. Holy shit. Hey, let go walk over there very quietly. Don't let anybody see, and hurry up and grab it before somebody else does. Because, man, I can't believe it's still sitting there. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Now, what I'm curious about with those two is it the object at the garage sale where you're really surprised it's out there, and then you get over there and you find out why it's out there? You know, like, these people want too much money. Maybe they are looking for more than what they should. Let's face it, neither one of these guys has contributed much in 2 years.
Yeah. I think they're both hurt too, right?
Walker's been hurt for 2 years. Sanchez has been hurt off and on for 2 years and is, you know, so aren't both of those guys got to be guys that are like, you want an invite?
Yeah.
I mean,
well, you know what we've seen, like, you know, Drew Smyly and other guys, we've seen teams sign them to 2 year deals with the idea that they rehab for a year. You know, Sanchez missed like the end of the year. I was big on the Cardinals acquiring Sanchez at the deadline. I thought he would have been a nice little wild card. It didn't happen. And then I think he ended his season with an injury. I don't remember Taijuan Walker, where he was. But like, if they're hurt, then it's one of those, you know,
Four games in two years.
Exactly. There's a precedent there that, you know, maybe you get Walker on a minor league deal, or maybe you can sign Sanchez on a 2 year deal where for the first year he makes $650,000 and then the second year he makes $4 million or something like that, an incentive laden contract. Teams were getting clever with that, and I'm anxious to see how that pans out in today's marketplace too, how the market officiates that, you know. I love it. There's no risk there, at least in our opinion. You know, $2 million doesn't seem like a risk at all to me. It seems like dealer money. You know, casino and we'll fill your purse.
Either one of them, you know. You could argue, again, now, you have the benefit of knowing what the man did later on, but you could compare either one of them to Chris Carpenter.
Mm-hmm.
You really could. I mean, they both talented dudes that just haven't been able to, for whatever reason, get it all together, and how much of it, like I said, is the whole health thing, obviously. I mean, listen, health is number one key to the majority of the problems that most people wind up having in the end.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, they like, you know, it's like when you talk to these guys, like, they'll tell you, like, there's some luck involved here. Like, all these guys can play. Now, the greats, there's something that separates them. But when you get past those superstars, all these guys can play. Some guys go on a run, and then it parlays itself into some confidence. Some guys get opportunities. Other guys never get an opportunity. I mean, it takes a lot. But both those guys you could look at and say, what's any different about these guys than Chris Carpenter? You know?
Yeah.
But I don't know. The interesting stuff, and I don't know about you, but, you know, I would be – like, if the Cardinals had one of those guys come in as a depth guy and as a sixth guy – you know, with the fact that you have and I know he pitched well the majority of the year, but, you know, Adam Wainwright, you've got, you know, let's face it, Carlos Martinez, you know, You've got a young second-year pitcher in Dakota Hudson who I know a lot of people are just assuming this guy's going to be great. I'm not 100% sure.
Yeah.
You know, like I always thought he was going to be a guy, and I watched him pitch last year, and I'm not saying it was smoke and mirrors, but like I didn't see anything about him that made me go, man, he's a lot better than Luke Weaver was when Luke Weaver was good, right?
Yeah. No, I agree.
You know,
and
so
the, you know, the peripheral stats bear that out too.
And again, I hope I'm wrong, because man, there was a time where I really thought Dakota Hudson was going to be that guy, but you know, you just wonder if the game's changed so much that guys like that are never going to find dominance over a long stretch. But, you know, and again, I just want the Cardinals to take advantage of the market the way it is now, like others have done, you know, because let's face it, what are we? We're sitting here with one of the last remaining awful contracts. I mean, Dexter Fowler, I mean, you know what's funny? Everybody told me when I wanted Michael Brantley that he was Dexter Fowler.
Yeah.
That's what everybody told me. Well, Houston got a really good player for a fraction. I mean, he didn't get the money, right? What do you get, a three-year deal?
Yeah, the years for sure.
Yeah. I don't care. I mean, you know, so they get him for three. We got Dex for five.
You know what's fun here, too? I just, like, the first thing that you said, you know, we talked about Brantley a couple of weeks back, but now the thought creeps in my head. I wonder how much of his success was sign stealing. And, you know, that's probably not the right way to go, but I
who?
Think
what'd you say?
Fine.
I'm sorry.
I'm sorry. No, I just said it makes me wonder how much of his success was sign stealing. And, you know, like,
I don't think
a lot of it is, and it's probably not fair for me to say, but. Like, the thought comes in my head now whenever I hear about any of these Astros players. Like, I think, man, I wonder how much of it was the electronic sign stealing, which, again, probably isn't fair, but it's a curious thing how that little scandal can just change, like, what the next question is after a player's name is brought up. You know what I mean?
Yeah, you know, it's funny because it was – what was it before it was PEDs, right? It's been – to this point, it's been PEDs and ballpark. When you start questioning if a guy's for real or not at the plate, right? It's like, well, will it translate because he played at this park? And will it translate because blah, blah, blah? And now you're sitting here going, you know, you're kind of sitting there going, hey, what are we doing with this? You know, it's like, how do we evaluate this guy? How do we evaluate, like, what do we do with this? You know, here's the thing. And this is kind of to bring it all the way around for me. So if you look at it and you were to say, how do I construct my club? Okay. The St. Louis Cardinals, there's no doubt, regardless of what pans out here over the next couple months, the reality of it is I think we would both agree that they are a lot of people agree they're going to do nothing. Well, they may do something, but even if it's something, they're like 97% ready to go.
Yeah.
So now you're at the point where if a move you make is either one of two moves, it either drastically improves your club or it's a depth type thing. There is no, like, there, in my opinion, the reason that we're in this boat is because there is no in between there that does any good for anybody.
Yeah.
And that was like my deal with Corey Dick. Like, I heard people say, oh, Corey Dickerson. I'm like, what? Why? I like Corey Dickerson. Corey Dickerson is a guy that seems like every year people just kind of like Moustakas, right? Like every year, I don't know why he can't get a job. And then the last minute he gets a one. You know what I mean? Like, and then he's a nice player, right? And good for Mike Moustakas that somebody finally said, you know, hey, listen, we're going to go ahead and lock him up because he's perfect for our ballpark, I can promise you. But, you know, and, you know, only some of our fans seem to have got the memo that you don't need a gold glove second baseman because of the shift, you know. And don't get me wrong, I love the fact that Colton Wong's a great defensive second baseman, but give me a hitter, you know.
Yeah.
Any move they make. Now, if something fell in their lap that drastically improved them and moved the needle, that'd be different. But doing that within their constraints – I think it's going to be difficult. So now we're back to what? A depth move. And that's where I think we're back to the garage sale.
Yeah. I think it's a good point, too. And you don't need to look any further than the Cardinals 40 man to like truly understand that, to truly see that. You know, they're at 40 men. We talk a lot about the Cardinals mumbo jumbo and most speak and stuff like that, but they're usually, and granted, it is still a cryptic, you know, very, very broad sense when they talk, but they're usually pretty straightforward if you really listen. You know, they were
sure.
You know, they said at the beginning of the year that they want to give opportunities and they're going to let the market kind of play out, and that's going to happen. And then you don't need to look any further than the 40 man to see that that's their current plan. You know, it's packed. It's not like they can just add a bunch of depth pieces. They feel confident in their depth. You know, it's going to need to be some type of improvement for them to bring on. Unless, of course, they can just dump some of these guys off the 40 man and get something in return. We know that now that's their plan. We know that they're not just going to dump anyone off the 40 man because they had the opportunity to do that and they didn't do it. So I guess there's always a chance they could try to get guys off of the 40 man and then get minor leaguers way, way down just to get them off the 40 man to create spots. But it just the 40 man in general tells us, along with the Cardinals payroll and along with the words that they've said, that their goal is to either get substantially better if capable or to roll with the group that they have. And that's what it looks like. It doesn't really seem like there's a middle ground there.
As we speak, left-hander Cole Hamels signs with the Braves for 1 year, $18 million.
18? Wow, holy cow.
Basically a qualifying offer, right?
I mean, I'll be damned.
Oh.
Wow, the Braves, that tells me, and again, first reaction, I haven't heard or seen anything, but it tells me that the Braves said 1 year is worth more at 18 than 2 years at 18 for anyone else. Like, they identified Hamels as their guy who would pitch well in that ballpark. And said that paying for one year at an elevated price is worth more than anyone else on the market and what the market might get. Like that makes me wonder how high the pitching market is actually right now. Aside from a 1 year Hamels, man, I thought like 1 year $10 million for Hamels or 1 year 12 with some incentives or something. That is a big contract. That tells me the Braves had their guy and were willing to go get him.
So let's stay there then with the market for pitching. It sure sounds like Gerrit Cole's going to set a record if you believe, you know, and let's face it, the Yankees are involved. And anytime the Yankees are involved, that's good for whoever the player is. So it sure sounds like he's going to be the highest paid pitcher ever. And as I said before, I mean, he just flat out got paid this year. I mean,
yeah.
I mean, holy moly. Like, what a time to be dominant, right?
Yeah.
So he gonna get paid. I'm assuming Strasburg's gonna get paid. Zach Wheeler gonna get paid? It sure sounds like it.
Yeah, I really, man, $100 million for Zach Wheeler sounds crazy to me. And I like Zach Wheeler. I just think of all that injury history, and I know he had such a good 2019. But I'd be so worried about that injury history that it'd be tough for me to go 500 for him. There's no way I will, but it does seem now that it's telling us that the market for starting pitchers is expensive, and that would track with recent signings. You know, Jordan Zimmermann's the first one that comes to my mind. I'm sure that there are more than that, but that's the first one that comes to my mind. When he signed with Detroit, you know, it didn't really have the history, was a bit of an innings eater, and had a spike in all of his stats and his velocity the year before he signed with Detroit, and then kind of fell apart and got hurt and all that stuff. But I do think, I didn't think initially, but this Cole Hamels deal has me believing that, Zach Wheeler is going to get paid.
Well, I mean, I look at Zach Wheeler, and yes, nice pitcher. And that feels like a gamble, because I promise you, if you want to get in the gambling game, if I was going to bid on Wheeler. If I was going to get involved in that, and I was like, let's just say I was the assistant to the GM and the GM was all over this, I might get in his ear and go, hey, why don't you call Boston and ask them how they feel a year later about Nathan Eovaldi?
Uh-huh.
You know, now it was 4 years, $68 million, but I promise you they wish they didn't have that contract. They probably don't even want the player.
Uh-huh.
You know. So, hey, since we're on this deal here, Let's get to the Patterson Tire and Service text line, because it you know, people are kind of piggybacking off where we're at on this. So let's let's just add to it before you get out of here, just to get 100% your thoughts on this. So we're going to go to the Patterson Tire and Service text line. They're a whole lot more than a tire store. Give them a call at 618-797-6711 for a quick quote on brakes, tires. You can talk to them a little bit about if that engine light's on. You can talk about getting it down, their oil changes, general automotive repair, and that is why they're a whole lot more than a tire store. They're located at 3718 Highway 111 in Granite City, Illinois. Been down there for a long, long time. They've been in the community for a long time, taking care of their own. They've done so much for people. It's a family-owned business. It's, you know, started by dad and passed down to the boys, and the boys take it really serious. And again, just great people that I've been fortunate enough to know for, you know, 30 plus years. But they've been in business longer than I've known them, and they've maintained their reputation. And there's a reason for that. That's Patterson Tire and Service, a whole lot more than a tire store. All right. So as we were doing the show today, and I had sent out, how'd you like our new graphic? It was pretty cool looking, huh? The boys worked hard on that, and had to get our logo approved by the by the Cardinals, but it's finally done, so our thing's all done. But as we got it out today for the first time, stuff's rolling in here. So right away, Jake D, we've obviously talked about Blake, but he asked, is there anyone who's DFA'd other than Blake that the Cardinals should be going after? So in your opinion, besides Treinen, who's the one player in your mind that was DFA'd that you think should be a St. Louis Cardinal?
Truth be told, I did not comb through that list the way that I should have. I've been so just focused on the project. Then I got sick last week a little bit. I haven't focused on it the way I have.
Of the names you've seen? Yeah.
I do like the idea, depending on what Kevin Gausman would cost. He could be a really interesting bullpen piece. Again, if you can bring him in on a one-year deal at a reasonable rate, then I like Gausman's ability out of the bullpen. I was impressed with him, the little bit I saw of him after he was a Red. Wouldn't want him to start. Wouldn't want him to give him multi-years, and, you know, unless it's super cheap, like 2 years, $3 million, or 2 years, $4 million, or something like that. Yeah, I might give that a try. But he's interesting. You know, it's funny you bring up Cesar Hernandez, because, I don't think that, like, there's a pressing need for Hernandez with the Cardinals, but that's the kind of guy that, like, I like. Super versatile. Does some things, you know. Would make a team's depth substantially better, and could do some stuff off the bench and play a decent field in a couple different places, like without really looking at the list, without really seeing what was going on. You know, I've seen a bunch of names thrown around, but like those were the two names that like stuck out to me, and I'll reserve my actual full answer for when I get to really peer through the list.
Okay, we can hit you with that again next week. How's that sound?
Sounds good. What about you? What about you?
Personally, I'm really in on either Walker or Sanchez. I think the Cardinals showed their hand last year. I think there's no doubt in my mind that I think the Cardinals showed their hand last year, and they aren't on the Ponce train or the Gomber train any longer. So who is that guy? That guy probably is Helsley, but with Jordan Hicks not being Helsley, I think's gonna be your closer. I believe that, yeah. Or your eighth inning guy. He's gonna be one of the two. Gallegos or him. Now, if you add Treinen to that mix, Treinen, whatever, that gives you a little flexibility there. But, man, after everything that's gone on, could you really bring in a guy and tell Helsley again, hey, you're going back to AAA, you're our sixth star, you're the first guy we call up when somebody goes down the rotation? Could you do that? I guess you could. I don't think he'd be real happy. But, you know, that happens. So anyway, that's my guy there. So, all right, let's see here. This won't go away, from a listener. Yeah. And this is, listen, I'd be all over it, but hey, I'd love to hear you talk to the guys about swinging a trade for Syndergaard. I think he'd be a great fit with this infield defense. Yeah. Syndergaard would be a great fit anywhere. Right now, I will say that I'll give you my quick thoughts on Syndergaard. I'll bet he's a frustrating guy to be a Mets fan. Like, I don't know about you, but this cat, have you ever watched these videos of him pitching? And yeah, sit there and I watch him and I go, how does anybody ever get a hit off of him? Yeah. And then there's times where you watch guys just tee off on him. They know it's coming. And it's like, man, he should be dominant. And he's just good. Does that make sense?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, he's shown that, like you said, he's shown the ability to be super dominant, and then there's times where he just gets busted. It doesn't make sense. And, you know, sure, I pursue the trade. I love it. I'd love to know what the Mets outlook on it. You know, I've heard that the Mets are trying to get rid of some of their veteran salaries, and they're willing to include prospects to make that happen. That's funny to me. I'd love to see what that looks like. But, yeah, sure, knock on the door, see what the Mets want. But I can't imagine the Mets. I don't think the Mets are in a position where they're going to try to trade Syndergaard for anything more than a king's ransom. And I don't think the Cardinals are prepared to make that kind of move. But, you know, you're talking about even for a guy who, like you said, has only been just good with his career stat line, but has shown signs of being absolutely brilliant here and there.
Well,
yeah.
Well, so, hey, let me ask you this. So if Wheeler's going to get all this money, if Cole Hamill's got $18 million, if Cole's going to break the bank, if Strasburg's going to get paid, we talked about like Dylan Bundy, like possibly trading for him. You're talking about trade. Doesn't that make those guys' trade value really high?
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, that's absolutely the thing. You know, that like there's like a lot of these teams that thought, man, I might have had a shot at Cole Hamill's. I really thought it. Or Bumgarner. Like, we haven't even talked about Bumgarner, right? Like, you know, here's the guy, another, you know, he's got the whole Noah Syndergaard thing going on. Like, you sit here and go, man, is he dominant or is he average or is he just good? What is he? But so that's my whole thing with them. So that's, yeah, Syndergaard's an intriguing cat, you know, and you would think, like, with everything that's went on with him in New York, that they'd be ready to like hit the trail here. And and that's what I found interesting is that, so if Wheeler's so good, and he was their guy, and they put up with the Tommy John and all that, right? They lived through it with him, brought him along. So they're just going to let him walk instead of trading, who has been a problem for him in Syndergaard.
Uh-huh.
Well, that tells me that, like, Wheeler, like that scares me about Wheeler if I'm out there offering him a lot of money. Does that make sense, what I'm saying there?
Yeah, and it also I agree with you. And even just thinking about the trade deadline, and granted they didn't have any offers that they felt comfortable trading him, but what they basically said is that the draft pick was more impressive than any of the offers that teams were making for him, which is a whole another just category of like trying to dissect and break down. But I agree with you. I would not touch a guy like Zach Wheeler. I love the stats that he put up. He's always been a dynamic arm. He was always one of their best prospects. He always had a chance to be very, very good. But I'm scared of that arm. I would not do it. And I love the point that you're making there. You know, it feels like, from going back to Syndergaard, that it's a lot like the relationship that the Cardinals have and Cardinal fans have with Carlos Martinez. You know, both lights out pitchers that sometimes just get hit hard. You can't figure it out. And then other times you watch him and the ball looks like a wiffle ball and no one comes close to hitting him. And, you know, granted, people in this particular area just have an issue with Carlos Martinez because he's Carlos Martinez. And probably maybe those same people wouldn't have an issue with Noah Syndergaard because of obvious reasons.
Sure they would. Let me tell you something. Let me stop you because I'm going to tell you this, okay? This is what I can promise you this. People wouldn't have a problem with Carlos Martinez if he was as good as he should be.
I disagree. See, look, this is where I will disagree with you because even when he was as good as he should have been, we still heard about the hair. We still heard about his inability to be prepared. We still heard about his immaturity, even when he was close to a top five Cy Young finisher. So that's why I disagree.
Hang on. I'm talking about on the field. Like, I'm talking about if he's any good or not. Like, all that other minutia. Like, I don't give a shit what his hair looks like. Okay? I don't. But what I do care about is the other stuff. Because here's the deal. It doesn't matter if you're good or not. Okay, they're not going to put up, like, most teams aren't putting up with that shit because it leads eventually to where it's gotten. Okay, you know, I like the one time Benji was on the show, and let's face it, he knows. And people were saying, I'm tired of them acting like he's a kid, treating him like a kid. And Benji goes, why? He is. He's a kid.
Yeah.
He's young, and he does. He acts like a kid. Now, you can may think that's bad. You may think that's okay. But that's what he is. He's having fun. That's what he is. Now, is that going to be enough? I don't know. Some guys can do it. Some guys can't. Well, guess what? I think it's proven that he's had some issues. And that's all anybody was saying. Now, people tried to compare it to Michael Wacha. And this is what I used to tell people. The problem is Michael Wacha's not that great. People, like, my problems with Michael Wacha were on the field. It's like, Jesus, come on, man. Come on. We got to get a third pitch, and it's got to become a quality pitch. You're way too predictable out there. You're way too, like, it's just, that was my thing with him. I don't care. Like, I don't care what Michael Wacha does, wherever. All I give a shit about is what goes on the field. And the reality of it is, Carlos Martinez had Cy Young stuff. And he should have been on a better track by now on the whole. Let me tell you, though, there's been times over the course of, I would say, I'll give him over a two-year period, he was as good as anybody when he'd hit the mound. And that's what I mean. Like, just go win. Like, you know, what Al Davis say, just win, baby. Just win, you know?
Yeah, but that will, so, like, the point that I was making was that it seems to me like he is, like, Syndergaard is kind of the Mets version of what we've seen recently out of Carlos Martinez.
And I would
agree.
That
I was making, the point that I was making is I don't think that some of the bullshit that comes from the fan base sometimes would be there if it was Noah Syndergaard and not Carlos Martinez. And I think part of that is just the fact that Carlos has been around forever and we've talked about him since he was 18 and just overexposure to it. That's all I was saying in regards to that. It was more of a tangent getting off of than anything. But they're two immensely talented pitchers that in recent history have underperformed their own abilities. And I'd love to stack up Noah Syndergaard in this particular rotation. That would be amazing. I just don't think it ever happened. I can't imagine it, you know?
Like, so you're kind of still in his camp. You still think Syndergaard can be that guy. I mean, that dominant starter. I mean, like I said, I've been sitting here waiting for him to be a Cy Young winner for a couple of years, and it just hasn't happened for him.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
I still think Carlos Martinez can be that. So
I agree.
I still think that it's in there for Syndergaard. You know what I mean? Like, I do not watch Noah Syndergaard on a daily basis. You know, we're only looking at the stats. But when I do watch him and he is looking good, he's that pitcher, you know? I would be for trading him, and trading for him. I just don't know. I just don't think it happens. I can't imagine the framework of it for the Cardinals. And I do want them to get better. I just don't know how they do it.
Let me tell you about Noah Syndergaard. You know, I've shared my legendary fantasy baseball run this year because our league is more than a regular league. We're talking a shitload of money.
Yeah.
And I wound up winning the thing this year. And I've had Noah Syndergaard now. I'm going on the third year of having Noah Syndergaard because I paid him a bunch of money on a five-year contract. And let me tell you who Noah Syndergaard is. Noah Syndergaard is goes out one game and dominates and can barely get through five innings because he throws so many pitches. And then you're like, okay, he's back. And then you look at the matchups next week and he's playing Miami and he goes out and gets beat up, makes poor pitch here, does this, does that. So then the next week he's in Colorado. So you sit him, right? And then he goes out and dominates against Colorado. In Colorado. So then he comes home and plays against, I don't know, whoever. And you go, we've got to put him back in the lineup this week. And he gets pitches three innings. He gets knocked around. That's who he is. Like, and it's frustrating. So I can promise you, I personally would be the same way with him that I am with Carlos Martinez, that I am with anybody else. Like, you know what I mean? Like, that's where I was going with it. So I think we're both in agreement. If the Mets want to trade us Noah Syndergaard and we can get Noah Syndergaard and it doesn't cost us probably, you know, obviously Carlson or maybe even Gorman, anybody below those two guys, I'm all in. Let's do it.
Yeah, I agree. I'm about it. I just want the Cardinals to get better. And it doesn't seem like they're the type of team that would trade the assets needed to be able to acquire a player like that, regardless of if that player ends up being effective after the trade or not.
So let me let you go on this last point from Ryan Hetzer, who's a contributor all the time on the text
Ryan
line.
Ryan's really good stuff.
Well, it's funny because he doesn't really ask anything. He makes a statement, and I want to take it there with you before you go, and that is, it's the time of year for crazy Twitter, radio, podcast, wild trade proposals. most of which are not grounded in reality. Put together a realistic trade package for a realistic target. After all, if there is a Cards move to be made, it will likely be through trade. Okay, I'm totally on board there. The Cardinals seem to prefer to go that route. So this is what I'm going to ask you before you go. If the Cardinals are going to trade a top prospect, who will it be?
Oh, man. I think more than likely they trade from their outfield depth. I don't know if you can consider any of them prospects, but and sorry, the seatbelt thing is beeping in the background.
Oh,
but they, I think they're most likely to trade, you know, whether it be Randy Arozarena or Lane Thomas. There's not a world where I still consider Tyler O'Neill a prospect, but I still think that that's the most likely area for them to trade from. I have to believe that they understand that their pitching depth, while they have guys, is still very thin. So I don't expect them to trade Ryan Helsley. I don't expect them to trade Daniel Ponce de Leon, not unless they bring in another pitcher of some type, you know? Like,
right.
I can't imagine them trading from their pitching depth. I would imagine that anybody that they trade is going to come from their outfield depth or, you know, their infield depth at the minor league level. And in that group, I consider Gyro Munoz. Like, again, I don't know what kind of market he has or whatever, but to me, that's where it would come from. It would come from that direction, and I think the only way that they trade a pitcher is if they got a pitcher in return.
Yeah, I'll say this. That would be like, I'm with you there because, and I mean, this is a whole nother show, but the reality is at the end of the day, they've got too many outfielders.
Yeah.
So now somebody's got to do their job and decide which one to keep and which one to trade. And I think in the end, I don't know that any of them like are drastically like I think he's awful and he's an all-star. So mm-hmm. I think the decision could be made for you based on, okay, well, who's available and who you're going to go get, because then they're probably going to tell you which one they want.
Exactly.
You know what I'm saying?
Exactly.
Like say it's Ken Giles. Well, Toronto's going to go, well, this is the guy that I believe gives us the best bang for our buck. So we're going to go with this guy. And then the Cardinals got to go, well, that's the guy that we definitely don't want to move. We want to move these three. You can pick one of these three. Well, no, we want, you know, and that's how it works. Right. So I think that would lend itself to how it may wind up working, but I could be wrong. I don't know.
No, I think you're right. And I think to take from that, to piggyback off that, it's in the Cardinals' best interest to not overvalue one of them over the others in any capacity. Again, aside from Carlson, because that's a different beast altogether. Because of the uncertainty with him and his potential, like he's not a part of that group. He has to be treated as something completely different. But of the Bader, Arozarena, Thomas, O'Neill group, whatever team comes knocking on your door that says, this is a guy that interests me, don't say, well, we're favoring Bader, we're not going to trade Bader, or we're not going to trade Thomas, or we're not going to trade Randy, or we're not going to trade O'Neill. Let the deal come from what the other team's asking for. I think that that's the absolute way to do that.
Well, we'll see. But a great conversation today. Before you go, I know you've got a large share project going on right now. Tell our listeners where they can follow you and kind of what you're sharing so that they can kind of get caught up if they haven't seen it.
I can't even. I've made a terrible mistake is what I've done. No, you can find me on Twitter at KYLER416. I write for Birds on the Black. Over at Birds on the Black, I've been doing my organizational position rankings. And like we talked a little bit about last week, it was supposed to just be like, hey, these are the three best catchers. Here's a guy who graduated, and there's a guy you might want to keep an eye on. And then we were going to do this for every position. And then I don't even know what happened, man. I don't even know what happened. Different starting pitchers and 15 different relief pitchers. And then instead of doing second baseman and shortstop, I was writing about 15 different utility players because the Cardinals they've changed like the way that they're engineering infielders and even athletic players at the minor leagues. Now you'll see infielders play the outfield a little bit more, kind of following the mold that Tommy Edmond is starting to show. And then all of a sudden I was writing about 15 quote-unquote middle infielders and still doing third baseman and still doing first baseman and still doing catchers because those guys are kind of still on their own. But yeah, it ends up being the last day will be Friday. Starting last Friday, we did the starting pitch, and then I kept the drafted pitchers, ranked them, the drafted pitchers. That it was relief pitchers. On Monday, we did catchers. Tuesday, we did third baseman. Today, I sent out the utility infielders. Tomorrow will be first baseman, and Friday are the outfielders. There's another 15 outfielders coming at you on Friday. And it's just more a painting of the general landscape of the Cardinals organization from a depth standpoint. than anything else. You know, I make a point that the guys who have made a major league debut, for the most part, are I consider them graduates, so that it gives us a chance to talk about the prospects who haven't made a major league debut in context that separates them from the guys that we know that are in your already in your line of sight. And I ended up writing 81 different profiles. We talk about 85 or 86 different players. There's gifts for every player. There's stats for every player. It was a huge undertaking that, honestly, I got so caught up in, I couldn't even begin to tell you how much time I spent on it, the resources I put into it. I don't even know. We also have podcasts. If you don't want to read my terribly written words, you can check out the podcast, Your Birds on the Black, on iTunes or SoundCloud. And I it goes to show you, like, last night I talked for an hour about the utility players, and then I almost deleted it because I was so embarrassed by how I had just spent an hour of my time. And, it's really, really embarrassing when you think about it. It's just really embarrassing when you step back and you're like,
it's harder than people think, because, look at us. Like, listen. People don't realize this, but you and I are supposed to talk for 30 minutes. It's been an hour.
Uh-huh.
Because it just, the conversation goes in so many different directions, and then you have a thought, and then it just takes off somewhere else. You and I are way too much alike in that. So, you and I trying to be on for 30 minutes is advantageous at best.
Yeah, we should aim for 5 minutes from
now on. Maybe an hour, but listen, your stuff's amazing. And like I said, if you're a true Cardinal fan, well, I mean, that doesn't necessarily mean, but if you love everything about the Cardinals, you have to pay attention to what's going on in the minor leagues. And if you pay attention to it, I think you can become more educated about it instead of just trusting what you're told. There are people that watch these guys. There are people that write them. There are people that see them every day. There are people. And while we all know that nothing's guaranteed, because until you get to the highest level, you still haven't done it. But at least you have a better idea. It's like I say all the time. I still want to know who the guy is that said J.D. Drew was a five-tool player. I want to meet him. I want to talk to him, because the guy couldn't throw a ball to home plate.
Yeah.
And the last time I checked, having a good or great arm is part of being a five-tool player. And it's like, I promise you, look, fast forward to today, it doesn't matter what somebody wants to tell me, a guy like you would be like, you know, listen, guys have seen him. He doesn't have a cannon for an arm, you know?
Yeah.
But he can do this and he can do that. And then when he got up here, I wouldn't have been like, he can't throw a guy out at the home plate from right there. Are you kidding me? He can't throw a guy out going to third base. Like, what happened? You know? So that's why I love what you're doing. I really do. Because it's the hardest part to get educated on, because we don't see it.
Yeah. And I appreciate that, you know, and I was thinking about it the other day. I've had people ask me, like, slide into my DMs and ask me, like, how come I don't do the 80 grade, the 20 to 80 grade system? And the quick reason why I don't do that is I hate it. I hate it because I think, in my opinion, the only thing that you can be truly measured at, like, an elite, like, 80 grade at the minor league level is speed, because it has a start and a stop time. And other than that, I think it's completely crazy, the idea to, like, label Nolan Gorman's power potential at a 70 or an 80 to say that it's truly elite. There is not a skill at the minor league level other than arm and speed. I believe, arm and speed, that it can truly be graded out as something that is elite. And that kind of gives you an idea, like, into my perspective in all of this. I hate the idea that we overvalue prospects. And this is coming from somebody who is self-admitted overvaluing the hell out of Dylan Carlson. I've been trying to get myself out of it, and I just can't do it. I wish I could. Funny story there. I was thinking about, as you said, five-tool player. Like, he's not a five-tool player. He has five very good tools, but he's not an extreme five-tool player. You know, he has an above-average arm. He's an average fielder who might be a little bit better, who has a above-average power and above-average approach. He's a really intriguing guy, and that's all that you can hope for. Like, he's reached the peak of all that you can hope for out of a minor leaguer. Now, that doesn't mean he's going to be an all-star or an MVP. It doesn't mean he's going to be a one-war player or a negative war player. It is, you know, what I try to tell you is that this guy – if you're going to bank on a prospect to have a positive impact at the major league level, this is the guy that you bank on. And I try not to make any outlandish claims about what a person can be. other than to give perspective as compared to other prospects that have come to the organization in that, like, in the same landscape, if that makes sense.
Well, so you're realistic, which most of us are not at times. So, well, hey, listen, man, yeah. I know I've kept you through your whole lunch hour, probably. I'm sure you got stuff to do, but I appreciate you. I know our fans appreciate you as well. And one of these days, you and I will talk for 30 minutes. I just don't know when it's going to be.
Yeah, sure. When I get another phone call from my dad who's texting me nonstop, and I got to roll.
That's great stuff. Well, hey, listen, man, thanks for checking in, and we'll chat next week.
You're the best, Jim. We'll talk to you later.
All right, my man and yours, Kyle Reese. Nobody does it better, and I do love having him on, and it means a lot to me. And like I said, I know these podcasts seem to run a little longer, and I know a lot of people are like, look, it's fine. I just listen to each guy at his different time, and we'll go from there. So Nomo's today got a text from him that something came up and he's out, but never fear, Bruno is here.